always locked on heat. Biscayne, South Beach, Goldberg and Ramil, talking heat, body chill. Got the stats in the news, got the facts and the views. Never know what they gon' say. Mailbag on a Monday. Pat Riles got the pack ride. Coach Spo got the know-how. Three bands in the raps now. Heat Nation, that's a packed house. Heat talk at the game time. Heat talk every day. I'm always locked on heat. Got it locked on heat. Always locked on heat. Keep it locked on heat. Seat geek for the cheap. What's the day got the heat?
And now, your locked on heat hopes. Wes Goldberg and David Ramil.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your daily Miami Heat podcast. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. We're finally getting to our mailbag. We had like a weird week of, we had a Sunday night game that we recapped, and then we had a Monday night, with second night of a back-to-back, so we just kind of kept pushing the mailbag down the line, and finally we're getting to it. So this is exciting.
It is. You know, I've got to take an issue with a, as always, statement there, because I haven't been available much with the season starting. These damn credentials, I can't seem to shake them and covering games in person, so I'm sorry. For all those listeners, and I know you're out there, Mom, aside from that, I'll try to be as available as possible over the next coming weeks.
How was the, you covered Orlando and the Knicks, but the Knicks were without Porzingis. So I'm assuming Porzingis didn't talk at all?
No, he did. He was actually available. He was available for a few minutes, before the game. He's huge. He really is. Quite thin, but he's very, very tall. And a very nice guy, extremely personable, and you've talked to him before, so you know this for sure. But I mean, he's just it seems like that that health issue that took him out of last night's game might be a lingering one. He's already had some health issues in the past, and it looks like it might be something that requires surgery in the offseason. So that's what they're looking at. It's a surprisingly good Knicks team. I know that a lot of Heat fans don't want to hear that, but they're actually playing at a pretty high level. They seem to have found something. Again, addition by subtraction, removing Carmelo Anthony from the lineup takes a huge amount of pressure off of the rest of the team. Yeah. Porzingis is a stellar talent, and he's really taken over that group as the man on that team. And they've gotten some solid contributions from guys that you wouldn't expect. Cantor's playing well as the starting lineup and their starting center. Jared Jack running the point. I mean, I don't think anybody saw that. And their rookie, who, if you recall, I liked in the offseason when we were talking about it before the draft, Frank Ntilikina, Ntilikina, that's how you officially pronounce it, I guess. Frank Ntilikina, he's very good. He's very good. He has a nice shooting stroke, and he's a really good defender.
Really good defender.
He's like a 7-foot wingspan. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I like that Knicks team, the way that they're kind of constructed without Carmelo. I mean, they've got potential to be good. They're probably not going to be – they're not going to end up very good, probably, but Porzingis has got the room cleared for him, and he could just kind of set the table however he wants. And at this point, they got Tim Hardaway Jr. in there for a really bad contract, but he's playing well-ish.
Yes.
And if
Ntilikina.
If Frank reaches his potential, that could be a pretty good team. I mean, with a point guard who is long and can defend the way that he can with his pick and roll potential, plus Porzingis, I mean, just those two guys alone, that's probably pretty good.
Sort
of build around that. But that's enough. It's not locked on Knicks. Did you have anything that you wanted to from the games this week? Any comments that you wanted to add before we open up this mailbag?
I'm not sure if you're setting me up here for something, but I'm missing it completely. If you're tossing me the softball, I'm going to whiff on it.
No, I'm not. No softball. I did the Suns recap, and I didn't know if there was anything that you wanted to add from the Suns game or for the Warriors. We talked about the Warriors together, but
yeah, we did. So, I'm still not high on this team because I think that they're still struggling. I watched the Suns game. Took a look at it. I haven't listened to your podcast yet. I know that's a problem, but I had to watch the game, so I didn't get a chance to hear your podcast, which would probably have been as informative as actually watching the game, but I didn't get a chance to.
It was you know, we're stuck with the Mark Jackson commentary I'm talking about the I was watching, so I've got two monitors set up, two TVs set up, and I was listening
to Celtics.
I was watching Celtics Lakers. And then I was comparing that sort of, I kind of kept switching the volume between that one and the Heat game, which was obviously Eric Reed and Tony Fiorentino. And it's amazing to me. I know we've talked about Tony a lot this season. He is, and as much as we kind of dissed on Tony, he is so much better than Mark Jackson that it's sad. Like Mark Jackson adds, at least Tony has like, he's got a personality. You know kind of what he's going to say, but he's got like, I don't know, he's kind of got like a good dynamic with Eric and everything like that. And so it's familiar and it's there and it's fine. And every once in a while he'll hit you with something like, oh, that was a nice thing that you said. Mark Jackson is zero commentary, like zero valuable analysis. Like he was talking about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, Boston's two young, really good wings. And he was, and his analysis was, the sky is the limit for these guys.
That's great analysis. That sums it up right there.
Like that's all
you need to hear.
It's awful. Like, mama, there goes that man. It's only going to take you so far, and I guess it can
hands
take
down,
you
man's
far.
Down. What are you talking about?
I can't. Like, come on, let's get something new in here. I don't know. I just he's awful. I think Mike Breen, he needs to find his Tony Romo. He is so good. Mike Breen is so good. He's kind of doing that thing that Eric Reed is sort of starting to do too, where he also does some of the analysis, you know, just because you can't necessarily rely on your color guy for really good stuff. Mike Breen was like, I don't know, maybe it's Kyrie Irving's handles look incredible this year, even better than last year. Am I going crazy? And Mark Jackson's like, no, you're crazy. Kyrie Irving's always been a good ball handler. And Mike Breen's like, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying he was bad and now he's good. What I'm saying was that he was fantastic and he's almost even better now. And Mark Jackson was just like, sky's the limit for this guy, or something stupid like that. And it's like, are you even paying attention? It's awful.
You know, it's funny. I was upset because I was wondering where Breen was. And I was like, oh, he's on the ESPN broadcast today. And then I saw the other half of the Knicks broadcasting duo, Hall of Famer Walt Clyde Frazier. Mm-hmm. And I've got to tell you, I was genuinely starstruck. Like I could not speak to him. Like really? There was an opportunity there where I was going to say something, and I was like, I felt like I was covering my first game again. And I've talked to like actual superstars in today's league, and it was, you know, Walt Frazier. I mean, my dad, you know, his first favorite team was that, you know, Walt Frazier era Knicks team. You know, when he came from Cuba to New York, that was his team. And so I heard about. I didn't even like basketball, but I knew who Dave DeBuscher was. And then when I saw Walt Frazier there, I was just like, wow, that was amazing. He's like, he's 72 years old too. He's still wearing the most dapper of colors and suits out there. And I was starstruck. I couldn't say anything. It was a mess.
Yeah. He's a good example of being able to kind of go from a career to, you know, color guy. Cause he's not great, but he's better than a lot of former players. And he's certainly better than Mark Jackson as a color guy. And he's got like a really good dynamic with Mike Breen. I think that's what's really important. Like that's why Tony holds up, is because he's got a good dynamic with Eric, even though Eric seems like annoyed with him half the time, but
he does.
All right, let's get into our mailbag. But first, a quick reminder to make sure that you subscribe to the Locked On NBA channel, which brings you all 30 Locked On NBA podcasts into one easy to follow stream in your podcast app. Our recommendation is to subscribe to Locked On Heat so you can get every episode automatically every day, and then subscribe to the Locked On NBA channel so you can scout Miami's next opponent, in this instance, the Utah Jazz, which is hosted by the one and only David Locke, who basically is our boss. Make sure to check out the NFL side like Locked On Dolphins, the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, first mailbag question comes from Big Pat. Says, when Hassan Whiteside was sidelined, they missed his rim protection, defense, and inside-the-paint play. Now that he's back, sometimes his attitude and his ineffectiveness, i.e. wrong shots, not passing out when the whole team is guarding him, etc., appears to affect his team's play. What is the Whiteside solution? He can dominate when he's engaged.
So I feel like we're being set up here because, you know, half of our listener base accuses us of being unfairly critical of Hassan Whiteside, and here's Big Pat all of a sudden asking us what the solution for the Whiteside problem is. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure that there is one. You know, his attitude has been a career-long problem for him. You know, it's what forced him out of the league. It's what forced him out of Sacramento when they were desperately in need of talent. It's why he couldn't latch on in Memphis. There was no doubting his athleticism and talent, but the problem was between the ears. And unfortunately, it seems like that's just that's going to be a lifelong problem for him as far as his NBA career is concerned. I don't know that there's ever going to be something to switch it around. And maybe we're overstating it a little bit, but there are moments there where he's so far removed from the action on the court that you wonder, you know, what's going on there? You know, why isn't he more engaged? And you know, big men need their touches. Hassan in particular is probably just more traditional in that sense of wanting to be fed the ball and fed the ball and fed the ball and have him put up 40 inefficient shots and see what happens. You know, and he's going to put up big numbers as a result, but that's not the way that Miami is constructed to win. And so, you know, you watch him, as Big Pat points out, you know, particularly in the Golden State game when he was an honest liability there, even in moments against Phoenix, he had a strong bounce back game. And there were still times there where he was forcing the issue or just not fully engaged defensively. And then he gets a big block like he did on point guard Mike James, you know, who should be in the G League, to be honest with you. And yet he's staring him down and not getting back on offense. So those kinds of things, they're entertaining for a minute until they cost you a game. And you know, while it hasn't cost this team a game just yet, unless you count the Golden State loss, I don't know. I don't know what to do about Whiteside. I love his talent. I love him when he's fully engaged. I loved him in the second half of last season when he was a tertiary role. We played a tertiary role. But in games like the past couple of them, when he came back from injury, I start to question whether or not he belongs on this team.
You know, we make that comparison with DeAndre Jordan a lot, right? And how, you know, famously or infamously, Whiteside said, "Oh, you know, I have different skills than DeAndre Jordan, or you know, we have a different skill set, and I have more responsibilities than him." But I think he flatters himself that way, and he says, "No, I can make the Heat can and should be running plays through me on offense." Where DeAndre Jordan, Doc Rivers has come out and said, "I don't run plays for this guy. He gets his points on rolling to the rim for lobs or putbacks." On the offensive glass, that's how this guy's going to score. And that's been kind of, and I think Whiteside looks at that, he's like, I could do more than that. But in reality, he probably shouldn't be. But you're right, he's traditional in the way that you got to give him touches in order to keep him engaged on both ends of the ball. And that's what I think this offense does. I think they realize that a Whiteside hook shot is 11 feet away from the basket isn't the most effective shot, but it's worth that sacrifice to basically waste one possession for him to do that, to make sure that he's engaged defensively for the next several possessions or for the next couple quarters or whatever it might be. And I think that's why you do it. And that's not unique to Whiteside. That's not a unique Whiteside problem. That's just a thing that all big men do, from Dwight Howard all the way to the start of the NBA. That's just kind of what it is. But as far as his wavering attitude, where in one game he seems engaged and the next he just doesn't, that's a problem. And that I know that the Heat were going to lose that Warriors game regardless if Whiteside was playing the best game of his life or not. They were probably going to lose that game. But that's when adversity hits, that's when you need your best guys to step up. And Whiteside is, by most accounts, Miami's second best player behind Goran Dragic, probably. And and you're paying him $23+ million a year. And there's this old saying in like college sports, you recruit your problems. And that's what Miami did by signing Whiteside to that contract. They knew what he could bring to the table, but they also knew what baggage he came with. And they said, we're fine signing up for this because of what we think his potential can be. And you hear Eric Spoelstra say things like, of all the young guys on this team, Whiteside still probably has the most potential, the highest ceiling of all these guys, the most room to grow. And I think that's true, but I think what that is if he would just play like he can every game, he'd be one of the top three centers in the NBA. But he doesn't, and that's his problem. And look, he does a lot of things well. Every player in the NBA has got a weakness. His weakness is, like you were saying, his attitude. That's what comes with him. That's just an innate thing that comes with Whiteside.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering whether or not he'd feel like he was engaged in part of the offense if he was a better passer, and maybe that's you know, would help him shake free of that kind of traditional type constraints. It's like, you know, again, as you were talking about here, you feed the ball to a big man, usually you're not getting it back, but maybe what we're seeing is an evolution of the position where more and more centers are capable and willing centers. I mean, you don't have to be a Nikola Jokic, although that would be ideal, I think, but somebody like that or Porzingis or Karl Anthony Towns, guys that can and do engage other players along with while they're getting
it's
their own
not
offense.
His game. And it's there's a point in against Phoenix where Justice Winslow cut to the rim at the perfect time. He was wide open for the cut, and he was right in front of Whiteside, but Whiteside just didn't see him. And I still don't think it's a reluctance necessarily to pass. I think it's a court vision issue. I just don't think he sees. I think he gets tunnel vision when he has the ball in his hands, and that's why he does those dumb hook shots. It's why he doesn't do his homework before the play, before getting the ball in the post, where he doesn't establish post position. He just wants the ball. And I think it's a court vision thing, and that's why I don't see it. If it was a reluctance issue, I could see that flipping at some point. Or I could see it at least flipping on a game-to-game basis, as we've seen him do on a game-to-game basis, where his attitude either gets in the way or it doesn't. He could be dominant, or he could just be an issue. If it was a reluctance thing, I think we would see more the games where he had three assists, you know? But we don't, you know? And I just think it's because he's got an inability to pass. You talk about guys like Lonzo Ball and their court vision. Whatever Lonzo Ball is, Whiteside's the opposite end of the spectrum. I don't think he could see 4 feet in front of him.
I wonder if he has an actual vision problem. Like maybe, or he lacks, you know, like he can't see to this peripheral vision, you know, or something like that.
You touched on it last year, I think last season. You said, it's just so demanding just to have the ball in your hands when guys are flying at you defensively. Yeah. And I think it's a between the ears thing. I just think it's too much to process almost, where it's like, all right, I see that their small forward is the one that is closing in on me. That means Josh Richardson might be open. And I know that Josh Richardson is usually going to be on the opposite corner in this set. I just don't think he has that. I don't think it's there for him. All right, let's move on to our next question. This comes from Rachel Rose. In light of the Bucks getting Eric Bledsoe and teams like Detroit and Orlando doing well, do you feel that the Heat are content with this team? We actually gotta do a quick read before we answer this question. How about we tease the question? We do a quick read. Introducing LockedOnHeat.com. LockedOnHeat.com. David and I, that's where we're going to be writing about the Miami Heat. We do your favorite Miami Heat podcast. Now we have a website to write about them. David and I have been writing for years, and we're excited to bring you this site. It's LockedOnHeat.com. Bookmark it, save it, whatever you gotta do. LockedOnHeat.com. All right, so do you think the Heat are content with this team, David?
I do. In as much as it's a two-part answer, in that they are content with this team because they did build it. I know it was their plan B or perhaps plan C or D, but it was the team that they built, and I expect that they'll hang on to the players that they have for a little while longer to determine whether or not the second half of last season was the mirage. I know that's probably not the answer that Rachel's looking for, but I do think that the team at the front office in particular is content with this team as it's currently comprised.
And by having content, said that, content, do you mean like just not seeking to blow it up?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to blow it up. Right? Okay. I don't know that they're going to go, oh, you know what? It's time to actively tank. Let's get rid of every contract and acquire, you know, 5-10 draft picks out of the deal. I mean, that's just not how this team works. I mean, they're never going to build that way through the draft. They're always going to, I think, you know, they'll draft whatever players they can in the hopes of complementing a star player that they acquire via trade or anything like that. But I don't think that they're going to blow it up in the way that we've seen other teams around the league do. Now, having said that, I think Riley is always looking to upgrade the team. Always. Even during the Big Three era, if he could have swung a move that would have brought in another complimentary star, I think they would do that. I mean, they were able to convince guys like Shane Battier, Ray Allen, Rashard Lewis, et cetera, to take lesser deals to come here so that they could add to the Big Three already. But I think that they'd do anything to possibly improve this team if it was available, you know, if they could acquire a star. That's why I think they were linked to, you know, guys like Kyrie Irving, why, you know, we've talked about DeMarcus Cousins in the past. If there is a superstar that becomes available over the next couple of months, I'm sure Miami will make a play and try to get a phone call in and just kind of gauge to see if there's an interest level, if there's anything, a package that they could put together in order to acquire a potential superstar to lead this team. And it's still early in the season. You know, I mean, to Rachel's point, I don't know that Detroit's success is sustainable. They're getting a lot of production out of Reggie Jackson, who seems healthy, but, you know, last year that wasn't the case. Tobias Harris, is that consistent? You know, Andre Drummond's already struggling with his free throw form after hitting, 14 of 16 in the first few games? And then yesterday he missed all seven attempts or something like that. Yeah. I don't know that that's a sustainable level of success. Orlando, same
but there's,
thing.
There's teams in the East that are moving up, though, right? Like, you look at...
That's true.
I think that's maybe Rachel's overall point, is that you got a team like Milwaukee who's making a move. You've got teams like Washington who look that they might be able to challenge Cleveland or Boston. Boston looks great despite not having Gordon Hayward. They've won 10 straight games. I think with the Heat, I think that they're teetering on the edge of not being content. I think they're still going to be patient, but you look at what Eric Spoelstra is doing with just altering his rotations on a game-to-game basis. And I love the lineup that he used last night against Phoenix. I love that he was able to kind of shrink it to eight key guys. And when Tyler Johnson gets back from illness, probably going to be those nine key guys. But it does, with all the changes and everything that's happening, I think Spoelstra is a little frustrated that this team isn't what it was in the second half of the season. They didn't just kind of keep building. They didn't kind of keep carrying that going forward. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think it's a lot of new contracts and guys trying to live up to those new contracts, live up to increased responsibility and things like that, that kind of get in the way. But this team, I think, is if this road trip goes bad, if the next several games after don't go well and they're still sub 500, or they are still just kind of lost, which they just seem a little lost right now, if they are that way in December, so like a month and a few days from now, I think I could see this team maybe looking to trade, to make a deal, to unload one of these big contracts, a Deion Waiters contract or a Whiteside contract even. I could see, or Tyler Johnson, if that's even plausible, which it might not be. I could see them maybe going in that direction. This team has all the makings of, okay, we've got this team of veterans who are kind of our core pieces: Waiters, Dragic, James Johnson, Whiteside. We've got all these young guys underneath, you know, Winslow, Josh Richardson, Bam, etc.
Yeah.
And it might be, if this doesn't go the way we want, it might be time to clear away one or two of these vets to make room for some of these young guys. Maybe clear a couple of these vets for future draft picks for other young players who we can add to this young group and kind of adjust our window a little bit. And I could see them. They're not there yet, but they might be there.
All right. Can I propose the alternative?
Yes.
If this team somehow becomes fully engaged,
okay,
let's say Tyler comes back. Look, Deion was out a couple games. Whiteside was out for five games. It's not the same issues that took place at the start of last year, but let's say it's been difficult, as you alluded to, building the kind of consistency that we had hoped we'd see early on from this team. Because of their conditioning, because this was basically the same roster as last year, we had assumed, particularly I assumed, that they would come off to a really hot start. That hasn't been the case. Let's say they do become engaged and we start to see signs of what we saw in the second half of last year. Is there any chance, is there any team in the East that seems like they're significantly better than Miami at this point? Forget about the superstars on said, you know, each and every team. Is there any team in the East that really truly scares you at this point? I mean, Boston looks great.
I think Boston's but
they're still missing Gordon Hayward. Like, they might be the worst representative of the Eastern Conference if they make it past the Cavaliers somehow. I mean, I'm projecting this into the future. They might be the worst team to represent the East in a good long time.
Since
the Orlando Magic, you know, almost 10 years ago. I mean, that was a team that kind of scrapped together some, you know, middling talent. I mean, they got really good production out of Rashard Lewis. They had really good Dwight Howard, Hedo Turkoglu. I mean, that team wasn't supposed to, I think, go to the finals, but somehow escaped past the Cavaliers again. And let's say the Celtics, without Hayward, somehow become the East Conference representative in the finals. I don't know that
I'm interested to see if their defense holds up, because right now they're the top defense in the NBA, and they look really good. They're flying all over the court.
Yeah, they're amazing.
They look incredible defensively. And Brad Stevens is doing a really nice job, the second best coach in the Eastern Conference, doing a really nice job.
Who's the first best? Ty Lue?
Ty Lue, definitely. Okay. Cleveland looks beatable. I think Cleveland's the third best team in the East. Everybody's like, don't panic. What's not to panic about? We were already talking about the Cavaliers as being a not good team in the summer. They are exactly what they thought they were. We thought they were. They're not good. What about them defensively is going to be good? They're not good.
I heard another counter argument to that, though. I think it was the SI Open Court podcast, if I'm not mistaken. They were talking about, you know, why are we talking about panicking when it comes to Cleveland, but somehow when it comes to the Oklahoma City Thunder, it's more about, well, give them time to develop. And it's not necessarily hit the panic button. You know, presumably the Cavaliers are going to get Isaiah Thomas at some point.
Yep.
Whether he's able to reproduce what he did last year remains to be seen. But there's a good chance that if he comes back, even if he's 75-80% of what he was last year in Boston.
Still an upgrade over Derrick Rose.
Yeah, by far. I mean, that makes them a pretty good team. One who can space the floor a lot better. Dwayne Wade has played well off the bench, not necessarily as a starter. I mean, Jeff Green is contributing. Ugh. You know,
I don't think anybody's panicking. Everybody keeps, why are we panicking? Who's panicking? Who is panicking about the Cavaliers? We are just saying what they are. They're a good offensive team that can't stop a lawn chair. Like, that's who's panicking? I don't see anybody panicking. I just see
Cavs fans. I think
this is just Cavs fans are always panicking, but it's just like they're panicking not because of the season. They're panicking because they're like, this team doesn't look good enough for LeBron to stay. I think they're panicking because LeBron's got 1 foot already in Los Angeles. Anyway,
he'd look good in the silver and black, I think.
Ooh, San Antonio.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. We're going down. Maybe we save this for Friday.
Free talk Friday.
Free talk Friday. Yeah. All right. So let's get to our next question. I don't think we really answered Rachel's question, but let's move on to the next one. This comes from Claudia Regan. Deion Waiters has been a turnover machine so far this season. We've had fewer turnovers tonight versus the Clippers. This is when we got the question. And no one played hero ball which Deion tends to do. Are we a better team without Deion Waiters? And I think Claudia speaks for a lot of Heat fans right now who are legitimately wondering this. And I got a few numbers here. With Deion Waiters on the floor, the Miami Heat are they have a negative 5.4 net rating with Deion on the floor compared to when he's not on the floor, right? So they are 5.4 points
worse
per 100 possessions when Waiters is on the court. Compared to their opponents. When he's off the floor, they are plus 1.1 in net rating, right? So, by the numbers, granted, still early on in the season, Waiters missed a few games. By the numbers, this team is better when Waiters is off the floor. But on the same, to that same point, the team is also better when Goran Dragic is off the floor, according to these numbers. So, basically what I'm saying is I'm bringing up these on-off numbers because a lot of people are kind of point to them to support an argument.
Exactly.
But the numbers still say that this team is better with Goran Dragic off the floor, and I'd say that's crazy. This team is much better when Goran Dragic is playing. That's obvious. I don't know. And I guess I bring all this stuff up to say I don't know. I don't know if this team is better than – what I do know is that this team is not as good when they don't have Deion Waiters in the final 2 minutes. Deion Waiters is really good in the final 2 minutes. He is really good at that. And he is, because he is mostly confident and just ready to score. He's not trying to make the best basketball play. He's just trying to score, and I appreciate that from him. You need guys like that. The Heat have missed him when they haven't had that. That's what I know about Deion Waiters. They need him in the final 2 minutes. I just don't know if they're better for 48 minutes compared to if they play Tyler Johnson or Josh Richardson at that position, for example. What do you think?
Obviously, we're pretty well known for appreciating Deion's greatness, and I think that Claudia is just trying to kind of nudge us a little bit with her question here. But it's also ironic that she asked this prior to the Phoenix game, where Deion had 6 turnovers to go with 16 points. Not his best game. But conversely, his drive and kick offense was a vital part of Miami scoring. Was it 126 points in that victory?
Yep.
I don't know that they do that without Deion. Now, sure, that's you a get point. A big contribution from Whiteside. You get a huge game from Goran Dragic. But Deion was essential in helping Justice Winslow knock down those 2 3-pointers, you know, because he drives to the hoop and frees up that space a little bit. And, you know, his aggressive offense, even if he's not finishing at the rim, that leads to easy buckets for Hassan Whiteside to clean up after. I mean, there's a lot that he does that isn't necessarily measurable, but still has an overall impact there. I mean, there's a lot of noise in those plus minus on off numbers. You know, that's I'm not a big fan of those because, again, there's so much noise attached to them. I can understand why you could look at them and say he's a problem, but he's finishing at the rim at a higher level. He is turning the ball over. I think part of that has been the lack of consistency in the starting lineup, of which he's been a part. You know, you have James Johnson a couple games. You have Josh Richardson. You have Justice Winslow. You have Hassan Whiteside out. You know, you have Bam starting. You have Kelly Olynyk starting. They've been a little carefree with the ball. I think that's across the board. With the exception of Dragic, I think James Johnson has been turnover prone. Josh Richardson has been turnover prone. So has Deion. And I don't think any of that noise comes with those two players as much as it does with Deion because, well, Deion is Deion. You know, he brings a lot of attention to himself with his style of play. And that's what works for him. You know, he's – I think we've talked about this before. That contract is huge. I talked about it with Sirat Sohi in our podcast a couple of weeks ago. You know, it's a lot of pressure for a guy like him because I think despite the overconfidence, the irrational confidence that he shows there, I think there are times where he wants to do – the best that he possibly can for this team, because I think he really does appreciate the opportunity that they gave him. And so he's trying to do as much as possible. He can force the issue at times, and it's going to take a little bit of an adjustment period for him to relax. But I think last night was a good step in the right direction. Despite the turnovers, I think it was a return to the kind of offense that we expect from him.
Well, you hit on a really good point where that drive and kick is really the – it does. You know, it doesn't even necessarily always show up in the box score, but just the way he's able to have defenses crash into the paint and open up shots for other people. He might not be the guy that's getting the assist, but he might be the hockey assist, right? And you're right. Yeah, he does turn over the ball a lot, and he needs to fix that. But I think he can. I mean, he's shown improvement, and then defensively, he has been so good. Like, we talk about Josh Richardson and Winslow's defense all the time, and we talk about Whiteside's defense often because it fluctuates, but Deion Waiters' defense has been consistently among the best players on the Heat this season, especially when he gets switched onto guys near the rim. I point this out almost on a game-to-game basis on Twitter. His defense against guys who are bigger than him, especially near the rim, has been awesome. Like, just really good. Like, he is strong, and he's been really impressive in that department. And if you get rid of Waiters, I think you lose a lot defensively.
Yeah, no doubt.
Next question. Final question comes from Kanaz Sweat. Should the Heat use their mid-level exception on Luol Deng? So Luol Deng's not been bought out, but he's unhappy with the Lakers and his playing time situation there, obviously. And so he and the Lakers may be seeking a buyout agreement in the future. And if that's the case, the Heat still have their $4.3 million mid-level exception that they could use on such a player who gets bought out and is available. Do you think that the Heat should do that, David?
I do not. I love Lou. I think his camaraderie with players while he was here, his friendship with Goran Dragic was a great thing during that year when they went to the playoffs a couple of seasons ago. He had two really great seasons here in Miami. And, you know, he just became too expensive to retain here as they kind of went through a rebuilding process. I think he's just not going to be able to contribute at a high level at this point. He's not that kind of player that can put in a lot of minutes, who can play a big role for this team. And I think there's just too many wing players. We were talking before the show about potential trades, and I think our wing position is fairly deep between Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, James Johnson, etc. There are enough players already on this roster who are younger, who are already getting paid a lot of money, and I think deserve the opportunity to continue to show what they have and to continue to develop and grow. And part of that is with playing time. I mean, a lot of people question why Justice Winslow hasn't gotten more playing time. Could you imagine the argument for why Winslow isn't getting playing time when you've got, 33-year-old Luol Deng on the roster?
Yeah.
I mean, oft-injured 33-year-old Luol Deng. Like, you can't take away from the kind of player and person he is. You know, obviously, you know, very well known for his charitable efforts, great locker room presence, with the exception of his short tenure in Cleveland. But overall, just he was a great teammate on a veteran Leyden team, you know, when he was here a couple seasons ago. But how do you take away minutes from guys like Richardson and Winslow just to have Luol play a couple of more minutes here in Miami than he is in Los Angeles. I just don't think he's going to get the kind of playing time he's looking for. I don't know what team will give him that kind of playing time, but it certainly is in Miami.
Yep.
That's it, huh?
Yep. All right. Well, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. You can send mailbag questions for next week to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your comments and questions for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Make sure you subscribe to the show to get podcasts automatically every day. You can go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Theme song is by CeeLo Keys. Outro music is courtesy of Malave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
Yep.